Country Radio. Black Country Radio Sport.
Our story tonight about a local footballing hero whose statue stands proud in Dudley Town Centre starts on a day in July at Wembley, 1966.
Unbelievable scenes here, absolutely incredible. You join us here, the full-time whistle has gone at Wembley Stadium. It's England 4, West Germany 2, and England are world champions for the first time in their history. Skipper Bobby Moore will be going up to lift that trophy. Jules Rimet, and what a day to be an England supporter. Did we ever dream that this would ever happen?
One man who was missing that day, who should have been there, who would have been there almost certainly, was local man Duncan Edwards, a footballing hero. Duncan Edwards, the runner boy.
They called him a rock in the raging sea. He stood his ground and them around. Out his strength would carry all, a rock in a raging sea. The Renner boy, the Renner boy, he were the Renner boy. In the shadow on the castle born, the Renner boy.
Why should we be interested in Duncan Edwards? After all, he was just a footballer.
Duncan was a lot more than just a footballer, actually. And the reason why I'm so passionate about keeping Duncan's memory alive and his name still being mentioned is because Duncan was 21 when he died, and he's a local lad. He came from a very, very modest working class background, and he was the only son of Sarah and Gladstone Edwards. But he had this absolute passion for the game of football. It was never money orientated. He just had this absolute passion for the game that he loved. And he went from being a working class lad on a council estate in Dudley to walking out onto the hallowed turf of Wembley and representing his country at the game of football. And he would have been without doubt the captain of the 1966 World Cup. I had the honour of meeting Jeff Hurst just a few months ago, and I gave him a copy of my documentary And Then Came Munich. And without any hesitation at all, Jeff looked at the film and said, he would have been my captain. And that doesn't take away what Bobby Moore did, but I think it highlights how good Duncan was. And he's a Black Country lad who, you know, his passion was for Manchester United, but his heart was in the Black Country. And I think we should celebrate that. And I think we should remember this lad who was one of ours. He was one of us.
Because his granny and granddad, they kept the Shakespeare in Stafford Street.
The pub. Right.
Now, his granddad played for the Baggies. His uncle played for the Baggies. It was a footballing family. Because when my old mum finished driving the wagon on a weekend, we used to walk it from Sims Lane to Stafford Street, Dudley. And we'd go in the shacky and sit on the stairs. You couldn't go in the kitchen, but we used to sit in the passage on the stairs because there were no kids' room. And that's the same Edwards' family.
Did anybody from the family admit to putting the first football at his feet then?
Oh, that was his dad. That
really?
Was Gladstone.
Yeah.
When they had the reins that had got the little bells on them, Sarah would hold the reins and Duncan would be kicking the ball. And his very first pair of football boots that Gladstone bought for him, he went to bed in. He wouldn't take them off.
Well, Duncan Edwards lived on the corner of Elm Road, and my auntie lived just up the road. Well, Mum used to take us down there a couple of times a week, and, of course, me and my brother had got to go and play outside, and he used to come up and want to join in, and He gave me a jar of marbles for my brother. That was when I was seven. Duncan is 6 months older than me.
Right.
I shall be 80 in April
2017.
Next year. That's right.
So did he take a shine to you? Why did he give you his marbles?
Because he did take a shine. That was just the beginning. It so happened I went to the same school as him, the Priory School. He went in my class, but he had a gang, you know. Arthur Shakespeare was his best friend, and there was Tommy Shaw, and there was Malcolm John, there was Eric Weeks, and he used to tease me, well, besides all the others, and we used to run up the three stumps. Well, that's how it started, see.
The little lad then, the cuddly little giggling boy, where did he go to school? And eventually he moved to Wren's Nest as well?
Yeah, well, it's a split, really, whether it's the Priory or whether it's the Wrenner, you know.
Sorry, my apologies, it's not a local. It is the Wrenner. The Wrenner.
The
Wrenner, my apologies.
I'm a Dudley girl, it's the Wrenner. he went to the Priory school as a little lad, and then went to Wolverhampton Street School, and it's there that the real talent that he had was discovered, and he was signed as a schoolboy international.
He actually, when you realise the age, he was 5, 6, whatever, during the Second World War, starting up then. Was there any dangers or anything happened to the family? Because this part of the Midlands was well known for being bombed and attacked.
Yeah. The Midlands is landlocked. I think at the time there was this general consensus that it was going to be safe. But of course, Top Church was bombed during the war. There was a row of houses opposite Top Church that was, you know, destroyed by bombs. So I don't think anywhere was ever going to be safe. But from knowing Sarah the way that I did, she was not going to move anywhere. They were a very, very close-knit family. Lots of cousins around Duncan as he grew up. But they were staying where they belonged, definitely.
The voice there of Rose Cook, also Pauline Ludwig, possibly Duncan Edwards' first girlfriend, and Dennis Fellows in there as well. You hear more from people who knew Duncan Edwards, loved him, and still miss him. By the way, I'm Roy Falstead, and I'm going to help you through the story of Duncan tonight.
A book of babby, Duncan was, down 31 Elm Road. And from that day his path was set, like fossils in the stone. The grace, the bunks, back on the settle, the caves where he growed up, and Duncan Edwards would become a legend to all us. Footstepped, he took, he kicked a case ball again the brewer's wall. Yed it, chuck it back, yed it again, a Duncan his father had call. Come now, son, it's time for bed. Oh, 5 more, Dad, Duncan said. The warmest gleed within the flame, his future cast solid. Now some are we are blessed with gifts that nature as we grow, his yed, his fate, his granite frame, Duncan's seed was sowed. By 12, his name was heard upon many scouts' own lips. Then Jack O'Brien from the Red Devil spake, hey, come and watch this Wrenner kid. Barty Wally drove on down, and he signed for the man new. Duncan laughed. I'm off to bed. Tomorrow I've got school. He pulled on the shirt that was his team he'd dreamed on all his life. A Busby babe, one on the ruck, the greatest on all time. And the accolades come pouring in, but he'd lose his yed. For he were brunged up, a black country lad, and it set him in good stead.
He had a sister who died what would now be called a cot death, really. So
was that before or after he was born?
That was after he was born. And so the loss of their daughter, I mean, Sarah and Gladstone came from a different age of all this, you know, I love whoever on Facebook and social media, and they were a very old-fashioned couple, but they adored each other. So the fact that they had lost a child together is sad for anyone, but it was sad for them. So Duncan really did become you know, the light of their lives.
What sort of a little chap was he then when you were talking to Sarah and other people then? What sort of little boy was he?
I had this real connection with Sarah because at the time my boys were only very, very tiny at the time. So when she spoke about this little lad that was full of giggles and full of cuddles and all he ever wanted to do was to kick a ball, I struck up a real rapport with her. Yeah. Because I would tell tales about what my children had done and what they'd said, and she told such wonderful stories of absolute love of this, what on all accounts was the most adorable little boy, who was a total mommy's boy, who adored the game of football.
I was into sports. I was a swimmer and I won the diving championships for the Midlands.
Wow. How old were you when you did that?
I was 11, 12.
Really?
Yes. And we used to ride our bikes together as well. I used to go down to Elm Road and they'd ride up to Blodder Road up to see me. He used to kick the ball over our garden and knock the door and ask me dad for the ball. And after he'd done it about 4 or 5 times, my dad says, he's not after the bloody ball, he's after her ear. That's what... And I used to tell him, I used to say, don't put the ball... If it wasn't a ball, it was a can. If it wasn't a can, it was a brick he was kicking all the time. Yes.
You were actually next door to him.
Yeah. I was in the house when the ball... When he was knocking the door for the ball, he'd say, can I have my ball back? And my dad says, yes. Well, after a few times,
Dad sorted out. Did he chat to you when he came to get the ball back? Was he sort of looking around for you?
No, I used to come out, and I used to say... And he'd say, well, why didn't you come out when you saw me? I said...
but we played against him with football. He was honoured and everybody loved him round here, even round in the Priory itself.
Was this at school?
This was at the school. It's a senior school.
Senior school, okay.
Luke Gold Senior School,
right,
that was
okay.
It.
Right.
And one of the days on the Saturday, we had to play Duncan Edwards' team. That was about 12. And we had to play against Duncan Edwards' team on Buffery Park on an afternoon, you know, school time. And me and my brother, we played. My brother was... We called him Stanley Matthews because of his dribble. And we said, this chap come out. And I said, Paul, look at the size of him. He was big, stout, and kid. Could he play football? When we said him come out, we was just flabbergasted. And I said to my brother, Mac, I said, Jack, I said, that's Duncan Edwards over there. I said, so... We ain't gonna let him get the ball. I says, me and you will go in and see if we can nobble him. And when he got the ball and he was racing down the field, we went at him from both sides. And me and my brother, we bounced off him because his weight, height, it was just tremendous. And I'd never seen a kid like him. Everybody, you know, was astounded to see a chap that big because I'd never seen a kid at the age of 13 or even up to 15 as big as Duncan Edwards was.
So how were you going after him? Were you trying to tackle from behind?
I tackled from the front and my brother tackled from the back because in them days referees used to just ignore what went on, and he went the one road and I went the other road. I mean, I hurt myself in doing it, but he just shrugged his shoulders and walked away.
Anyway, his nickname was Dally when he was young.
Dally?
Dally.
Why Dally?
Well, we all used to sing that song. Dilly, da dally, da dally, da dilly. Lost my way and don't know where to go. That was his name because we all used to sing. His favourite song was Jezebel by Frankie Lane. He used to sing that. And he was a rotten singer.
A rotten singer?
Yes.
Hang on, have we found something not exactly wonderful about this young man then?
No.
He couldn't sing.
He used to think he could.
Jezebel. never was born.
Where did he live for playing football?
Yes, he did. He was a born footballer, yes. I mean, like I say, I used to go and watch him down at the Dudley Football Grounds, you know, there. And, I mean, he was marvellous. And he just loved it. He was a natural.
Someone also said to me that even in his young years, he said he could have been a manager as well. He was that knowledgeable and had that way about him that he could have managed the team. Is that the sort of chap you
knew? Yes, yes. He lived for football. That was him. And in those days, the footballs were real leather and heavy. And when he used to header it, he used to throw it at me and... Ooh. I mean, it was terrible. I mean, how he could head at that kind of ball, I don't know, but he did.
We only come across Duncan Edwards when we was at the big school, Northfield Road.
Right.
That was 1950. We went there, right? Now, bear in mind, I was 11 years old, and Duncan Edwards is 2.5 years older than me and Haywood. First of all, he played for Dudley Boys. Then he played for Worcester Boys, County Football, Worcester Boys. Then he played for England Boys. From when he was 14, our sportsmaster, Mr. Groves, what was later the Park School headmaster, and then he was the first headmaster what went in the Cave School up the Renner. And then what they used to do, between the sportsmaster and the Park School, and Mr. Groves... He's down here.
Yeah.
They used to take him round the big schools. That's the Blue Coats, Ollie Hall, Netherton.
Right.
Right. In Dudley. Playing football on afternoon.
He'd take him round?
Yes, they took him round, right.
What, on his own? Just him
On his own in a car. Because he'd done all his schooling after on a morning. And all his wheel lot had to do, and I've confirmed it with my mate here.
Yeah.
The halfway line would be lined up with balls like they practice golf. And all you'd do is kick that ball to the goals. That's all he'd do.
Yeah, so when he was going, to go back to the schools, what was he going to the different schools for? Was he playing for them or was he doing this demonstration?
He was...
Doing the demonstration?
It was a demonstration. He was practising.
Yeah?
Because bear in mind, Duncan Edwards stood at about 6'1".
And at what age? At 14?
Oh, at halfway line to the goals at 14. He wore a little one, right? He was a big lanky one, and they used to bring him round on afternoons. And we used to carry the balls in the net and line them up across, like playing snooker, and he'd keep running at them and kicking them from left to right.
Now, in those days, those are case balls. Those are heavy devils of a thing.
Well, they got the lace-up.
Yeah.
Used to lace up, and the old boots used to have a strap across and the studs at the bottom. And as he was, line it all up, boom, and it was there. He could, if he was alive today, or when he went to Manchester United, he can kick a ball from the one goal to the other one.
And that was a case ball he could do?
That's a case ball, yeah. I mean, the balls today, if Duncan was alive today... I mean, them ping pong balls today, ain't they? You'd lose them. You'd lose the balls if he was kicking them. But, you can name a lot of things about Duncan Edwards. But to me, he was, I've played and I've been with some professionals, but there's not one of them is compared with Duncan Edwards.
No. When you saw him kicking these balls from the halfway line,
yes.
I mean, you've got to remember that this is early 50s and those
yes.
balls were flipping heavy.
There was number five leather case balls with a bladder in.
How far, if you were a young lad, how far could you hope to kick it at when you're about that age? If that, 10, 15
about
yards?
Far from here.
Yeah.
To the end of that boat.
Yeah.
And then don't forget, you've got to yed them. Yes.
Yes.
And you've played them with the wet. You know, when you had the old studs and the boot was on med.
So when you saw him doing that, did you think he's special? Because presumably he was kicking the balls into the goal.
Yes,
trying to, yeah,
that's all he was. And on the back of the new cemetery, on the old ash field with two goalposts, he played on there and all sometimes. Because we all played in football teams against one another.
Yeah.
All had we own pitches.
Dennis Fellows there. And before that, the poor man trying, to, along with his brother, to get hold of Duncan Edwards as a schoolboy in a football match. It was Ron Probert.
Black Country Radio.
That when I used to be in the swimming competitions, he used to come, you know, the gang did, and my mum never came, but they did, and he couldn't swim very good, and I used to jump on him, and that'd be another another start for that.
Yeah.
And then, when I left the Priory Road school, he went to the Wolverhampton Street school.
Yeah.
And I went to the Park School, the Girls Park School.
Yeah.
And he found another girlfriend. Sylvia Bayliss was his girlfriend then. She was captain of the netball team. And I knew Sylvia. She's married now and she lives in Gornal. Then we met up again. And I used to go and see him play football when he played for Dudley, and then when he was in the captain of England schoolboys.
Yeah.
Well, I used to go and watch him. I'd have a hot water bottle in a brown paper bag, and I'd hold it, and he'd be playing, and he'd see me, and he'd wave, you know.
But the biggest thrill I got out of that was when he played for Dudley schoolboys. We went down and watched him down the sports centre, and you wait for the kids to come out, Dudley schoolboys. And I said to my mother, I says, Jack, I says, Duncan Edwards, are you playing? Yo, she was. I says, oh, look, there's only 10. And he come out. They said, there we used to walk out. All the kids used to walk out, and he used to come out like that, and he used to be like that.
Hands in the air.
Hands in the air. And the kids used to say, Duncan, Duncan, you know. And it was a pleasure to watch and hear it, you know. But to me, there's no better footballer. Even the footballers today, I wouldn't compare Duncan Edwards with them.
And he liked to walk, and he was very romantic, you know. I mean, he was strong personality. I mean...
Was he always that thick set, and did he work on his physique, or was it just a natural, was he naturally athletic?
He was naturally athletic, but he was always riding his bike, he was always kicking something. If it wasn't a football, it was a can, and if it wasn't a can, it was a brick. Yes, he was always sporty, you know. In those days, they didn't have the rowing machines and the steppers and things like that, but he was always riding his bike.
When he was 14 years old, he split logs for my Uncle Albie fellas and Ike Mo, yeah, log merchants, for £1 a day, Saturday and Sunday, at West Street Yard, top of Grange Road, Dudley. And just before he went to Man United, my Uncle Albie fellas took him to cobblers in Wolverhampton Street. That's opposite the dairy in the West End on the left-hand side. And then the cobbler stood him on a piece of cardboard and drawed round his feet. Then the cobbler made his boots and a number 5 case ball, paid for by my Uncle Albie fellas, to take to United when he left home.
From when he was at school, whatever, didn't that disrupt his school years? How did his mum and dad possibly feel about his education, or was it just everything's football, everything else goes out the window?
If Duncan could have spent the 8 hours or whatever it is that you're at school a day playing football, Duncan would have done. His mum and dad were very, very... They were, they were soft as anything with him because they adored him, but they wanted him to have an education, and he wasn't... he was a sort of a middle of a range child. He was never going to be a great, you know, university don or anything like that. Equally, he had something about him.
Yeah.
But the big thing, of course, was football. But they did make sure that he finished his education and he did his homework, and they also wanted him to have a trade, of course, if the football was...
Oh, what was going to be the trade?
There wasn't going to be a lot of choice for Duncan, but he did learn the trade of carpentry. but there was never any way that Duncan was ever going to pick up a saw.
England schoolboy captain, and he rose through Samat's ranks like a rock in a raging sea, the words of Stokes' own Stan. Youngest ever then to wear three lions on our land. No greater player, many said.
Is there anything about his game that if you ever saw it, there was any weakness? Do you think there was a weakness?
There was no weakness at all in him. His heading was absolutely immaculate. His tackling was great. Well, this is, as I've said, this is where they got to Manchester United.
Yeah.
And if it had been with Manchester United after the Wasp name, he would have captained it. And he would have captained England.
But who were you supporting at the time? Who?
I was a Wolves supporter at the time.
So would you have liked him to go to Wolves at the time?
Well, he was too good to go to Wolves, I mean.
Like, they were all after him, you know, Wolves, or Albion, Aston Villa, but he wanted to go to Manchester United.
I've heard say that that was the team from when he was a child that he wanted to go to.
That's right. That was his dream. Plus his dad's dream too.
But why Manchester United? Because we're in the Midlands and...
I don't know why. He just... And his dad wanted him too, so he wanted to please his dad. Well, him and his dad, they, you know, sit and talk and they'd have newspapers, but...
That's who we wanted to be,
and that was it.
People must have been, as they say in the local in the parlance now, bigging him up,
yeah,
saying that you've got something fantastic there. Mm. When you look at the newspapers and things like that, what was coming out at the time about him?
That the night that Duncan was signed was the 2 o'clock on the morning of his 16th birthday. They travelled down from Manchester to the Priory Estate, and when Duncan signed on the dotted line, Jimmy Murphy was quoted as saying, and he undoubtedly said, "We have just signed the greatest footballer that England has ever produced." That boy was 16 years old.
That's a heck of a weight to be on your shoulders.
Yeah.
I mean, they talk about footballers now that go for big transfer fees and all that stuff. How did he handle that, or did he just brush it off?
He was extremely modest. From when he started playing football as a child, he would win trophies and plaques and medals and never say anything to his mum that he'd been made man of the match, or he would just... It was just another medal for the game that he loved. Very, very modest, actually. Yeah. There was no, I'm better than you, or I'm the star of the show. He was very much a team player, because he knew that the other guys that was playing with him all had the same passion as he did.
What did he project? Did he project that he was cock of the north, or did he just say, I'm in charge?
No, he wasn't that sort of kid. I mean, he went on the football field to play football, and he went on to win. And 9 times out of 10, he did win. He was just an ordinary working bloke. Duncan Edwards was the sort of bloke, he could get the ball at his feet and he could go from one end of the pitch to the other without even losing the ball. And he's done it many, many times. Even when we've not played against him and we've watched him playing for Dudley Schoolboys, as soon as he's got the ball, everybody seems to quiver and you know, and that was how he went. And it was fantastic to watch.
Yeah.
Absolutely fantastic to watch. And he was from the Priory Estate, because I used to go play for the Priory, play for the Washington at the Priory, and they're a brilliant place to live. Everybody's for everybody. And as far as football's concerned, Duncan Edwards, they were there to watch him. And I was honoured to play against him, and I wished I could have had more time to speak to him. Because he lived at the Priory, we lived up here. And that was the end of the year up here.
He went to play for Manchester United.
Mm.
And he only used to come home some weekends when he wasn't playing away. So I would go down to his house, down to Elm Road, and he'd be there with his mum and dad. And then his dad would bring me back up to the three stumps and I'd have to run up that part. And he was such a nice man, Mr. Edwards was. His mum was the boss, but she never got over losing that little girl. You know, that was so sad. He used to bring me back and then I'd go and meet Duncan down at the railway station. It was open then, down by the bus stop. And we'd walk up Castle Hill and he'd either come to my house. And now my dad would used to say to him, "Come on in, my son." I said it was a bit different from what you used to call him before when he used to kick the ball over the garden. He used to say, "He's here again, him." Now it's coming in, my son, you know. Black Country
Radio. What did he like?
Oh, yes, he loved the bands at the Hippodrome.
Yeah.
We used to go to the bands on the Sunday night, but we had to leave early because of him catching the train back to Manchester. But, oh, yes, he loved the bands.
What sort of bands did you go and see?
All of the jazz bands, all the big bands on the Sunday night at the Hippodrome. You'd sat there,
yeah,
like, and you'd clap and stand up and do things. we loved that. And we'd go there, but we always had to come out early because you'd got to catch the train back to Manchester.
Would you have been recognised out in town when you're out? Because he was getting known for 16. Were you two? Have you seen?
Yes, but I was in the beauty competition for the Sunday paper. He sent me three rows of pearls and some nylons. I kept those pearls for a long time. But then we fell out because I went to a dance and one of his friends told him, this was while he was playing away, and they told him I'd been to the dance and we fell out.
This was when, was it Man U?
Man United, yes. Duncan wanted to take me to see Matt Busby and my mum wouldn't let me go. She said, "What?" She says, you can't do that, you know, so she wouldn't let me go. And he was disappointed. Like I say, I went to the dance and his friends saw me and we fell out. And I found my former husband and he got engaged to one of the trainer's daughters.
You didn't see anything of him personally then?
No.
Oh, no. But did you follow what he was doing whilst he was
playing?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Yes. You couldn't be off following him. He was a lovely lad, that's all I can say. He was a lovely lad, and as soon as he had some money, he bought his mum and dad a bungalow. I mean, they didn't have any money. They moved from Elm Road, they moved to the Russell's Hall, that when that was new. And then after that, like, Duncan and I were finished. I knew we bought them a bungalow.
Manchester, Manchester United, a bunch of bouncing, busty babes, they deserve to be knighted. It's the greatest thrill you've ever seen. They are known as the soccer machine. They are the best, there is no doubt. So raise a chair and give a shout. Manchester, Manchester United, a bunch of bunks and busty bits, they deserve to be knighted.
All that great joy, all that great potential was to end on a February day in 1958 in Germany.
Manchester United footballers are among the dead. The plane caught fire shortly after takeoff this afternoon with 38 passengers and 6 crew on board. The footballing world is reeling from the loss of some of its most talented young players, known as the Busby Babes. Their average age is 24, and included Roger Byrne, the captain Mark Jones, Eddie Coleman, Tommy Taylor, Liam Whelan, David Pegg and Jeff Bent. 8 British sports journalists and several club officials have also been killed.
We tried to get off first time, and then he went back down the runway, tried it again, second time, and pulled up very sharp halfway down the runway, realised there was something seriously wrong. So he took us back to the terminal, and everybody got out, and someone had coffee, tea, whatever, just sit down, relax. We all felt there was something wrong, you know. And then he started to go. I just sensed there was something wrong. And I strapped my seatbelt very, very tight. Got my head below the rim of the seat. It was quite a high seat. Off it went. And I felt, looking through the window and the snow flying along, looking through the window on my left. And on my right was Johnny Berry, Roger Byrne, Billy Whelan, on another table opposite. Billy Whelan said, as we're going away, he said, "Well, if anything happens, I'm ready." He was a staunch Catholic. I realised what he meant afterwards. It just went, and then there was one tremendous bump as we're going down the runway, and then another one. Then I thought, well, if there's another one, we won't be able, we're going to go, because it was sickening, you know. And of course, we had it. It was blast. And seemingly, the plane was cut in half. I just sat there. I don't know how long I was out. It must have been a few seconds or a minute or what. I don't know. And then I tried to get my seatbelt off. And then Captain Thane knocked on the window and said, "Get out, because the engine is smoking." And eventually got the belt off and then ran. There was just a big hole in the aircraft, which I went through and ran about 30 yards. And as I turned around, I could see the whole picture, you know. Where Duncan was sitting, I don't really know. I didn't know whether he was sitting at the back or was sitting in the front, but obviously he must have been at the back.
Bill Foulkes, survivor of the Munich air disaster, later on to win a European Cup winner's medal with Manchester United in 1968.
It was a winter's morn in Germany. The dream come to an end. The Munich crash, it took his life. Like time, it just stopped dead. For 15 days, his courage fought all his fateful injuries. But in the end, this lion's roar to folklore quietly slipped.
I was on 602, and we had the old black and white tellies. Yeah. And when we come, it come on the news, plane crash, Busby Babes killed in Munich. And it's just stopped Dudley dead.
Just before they flew out to play the European game, Duncan had come home. He'd spent the weekend with Molly Leach, who was the woman that he was going to marry, and then obviously went back up to Manchester and then flew out to play Red Star Belgrade. The telegram that Duncan had sent just before the third attempt, which was the fatal one, Duncan had actually sent a telegram to his landlady in Manchester, who really was like his second mum, saying, "The flight's delayed, but don't worry, I will see you on Friday." And that was the communication, really, the last communication from Duncan. But he did survive the air crash, and it was the strength of this lad, I think, that had sustained him through the actual crash. And he was conscious and he was very aware of what was going on, confused at why his friends hadn't come to see him. He was very, very upset, and that always upsets me a little, because he couldn't understand why Roger Byrne hadn't been to see him.
So he wasn't told about what happened to the others?
No. That always makes me really sad. He had no idea that his mates had died. Kept asking, "Where's Tommy? Where's Roger? Why haven't they been to see me? What have I done? What have I done to them?" And I know that used to upset Sarah, because he just didn't know, and they decided not to tell him. He saw Jimmy Murphy and said, "You know, what time's the kick-off on Saturday, Jim? Because we're playing the Wolves." And the last conversation he had with his mum is how I end the film, actually. Because he'd brought this new car, which was his pride and joy. He'd learnt to drive, bought with his own money this car. He had a beautiful young girl sitting in the front of it, Molly, who he was going to marry. And he said to his mum, "You know, you've got to get me out of here, Mum. just talk to the doctors for me because I need to go and play Wolves on Saturday.
Was she at his bedside?
Yeah, yeah. And she says, well, you've got your car back home, Duncan. So you're going to have to come, because I can't drive it. So you're going to have to come back and it needs to clean that because it's been outside. And the last words that he said to his mum was, you keep it there, Mum. You keep it there till I get home. And of course, that, you know, those were his last words. He didn't come home.
If I shut my eyes, old Mavis Bate, I can see him now, tearing like a stack he'd roll, and on dart another blow. They come, they go, and all they nod, no better ever said. So Bob had all his shell a tear for our own Renner kid. In droves the army wears the shirt, treading streets they know, colours shone out from the glass where Duncan's spirit grow. Young and old, they kept him near. His story carries on. He might have left, but he may gone, for the Renner is his own.
And he was in hospital. We thought he'd pull through, to be quite civil with it. And we was hoping. But when he come over, as he died, you know, it shocked everybody. Well, they've got a big statue of him in Dudley.
Yeah.
And he should have been, that statue should have been there before. I think it should have been there 12 months after he died.
It was on the radio. Yes. I couldn't believe it. My mum told me, and well, everybody was devastated because he was the local boy, you know. And I mean, oh, no, we just couldn't believe it. And then they were telling you who had died, but Duncan didn't. He was okay. We had hopes. But then he died, and that was it. No, just terrible.
Were you around in Dudley when his funeral was arranged?
I was at work, and it was in the local papers to say they were bringing Duncan through the town, and nearly all, everybody at work had time off and went, but I couldn't go. I was too upset.
And presumably your workers knew who you were? When...
Oh, yes. They all knew. I mean, Duncan had been there.
Yeah.
He'd come and met, you know. That was before, remember?
Yeah.
When he died, he was engaged to the manager's daughter. And I was married then, but I still didn't like what happened to him, you know.
You've also got another story about the day of his funeral as well.
Yes, I was on nights, and I used to go and help me on, and my cousin Sammy, bag them up and carry the bags, because it was a log business going round. It was a wartime Old Morris commercial. It was a 30-100 weight wagon made into a three-tonner, carrying the logs. And as the court edge come, I'm sure he'd come up Wolverhampton Street, the wrong road, with the police escort. That's when the policeman stood and no traffic lights. And then we got the wagon, because we was in Wolverhampton Street, and he pulled over on the footpath in front of the post office, and he says, we're going to funeral. And he drove his army wagon full of logs on the end of the cottage.
There are pictures, and people talk about the day of his funeral.
Yes, it was a big funeral.
And pictures of people out on the street? And...
Yes, it was a massive funeral. Massive. And the motors, we'd never seen motors like them. And all them lot was from Man United. They all come, all in them big cars.
When he had to come to the funeral and come down to the creme, the streets were lined. It was just phenomenal. You know, he's bedded down there. And Manchester United, whenever they used to come to play the Villa, Albion or the Wolves, they all go down there to visit his grave.
That used to happen?
That used to happen every time they came and played one of the local teams round here. Wolves, Albion or Villa. Well, some of the kids used to go down there and follow the coaches, you know, because it was a coach that used to take them down there. And the kids used to go down there and sign and watch for them.
After it was all over, and he's on that other side in the new cemetery, his grave, they put a black marble bowl for the flowers, and he got pinched. Now, them lot at the Renner, all the tarmac gang and the Annas and all at the footies, they went after him, and they found him, and they told him, you put that back on that gravestone the same time as you pinched it, or else.
So, the people who'd taken it, had they taken it because...
Don't know.
They'd just taken it, and then... And a
it
group...
never come to court or nothing. The Priory lads, the footies, right?
Yeah.
All off the Renner, all that lot, the tarmackers, all the Annas, the Rockies, and all that lot, what played football, Davises, they found them, and they got out on them, and they made them put that gravestone back.
Football,
and that was never recorded in the paper. It just said, Duncan Edwards, pot on the grave, pinched.
"5,000 lined the Dudley streets when the Renner boy come home. Was laid to rest in his own earth, where his life begun. Were a day of memory, sad to recall. We had farewell, he left us all. And upon his stone, these words they lie, in the marketplace, let the curse he fly."
I think Duncan had this great affinity with Sir Bobby, because Sir Bobby really struggled for his place there. They didn't give him an easy ride at all, and they knew that he was a great player, which he undoubtedly was, but they really made him work for his place. And there were sometimes when he was so disheartened that he just wanted to pack up and go back home, you know, to the northeast, and Duncan was always there to spur him along and just saying, "Don't worry, Bobby, you'll get there, you'll get there." And of course, after the Munich air crash, he really didn't want to play football anymore. They were his friends, you know. It was a very traumatic experience, and he was only a young lad himself. And his friends and the ambition and the dream that they all had all went that afternoon in Munich.
Struck you most when you were talking to him about Duncan Edwards?
It was a very emotional interview. I interviewed him 3 times, actually. When he got to talking about the Busby Babes, he came alive almost. You know, he was part of this incredible piece of football history. They were great mates, great affection, had this great affinity with each other on the pitch. And when it got to talking about Duncan, his whole being changed, if you like. There was a great sadness that this man, who they were like brothers. I mean, Bobby obviously had got Jackie as his brother, but there was a great closeness between Duncan and Sir Bobby.
You knew him personally, and I ask people who weren't in the sports environment, and I say, why should we remember this man? Why should, out of all the footballers, all the wise, you know, people and the great, why is Duncan so special?
He's a local guy who did outstanding. Not just at the end, he was from a child, he was in the youth's football. He was captain of the England youths. And I mean, he worked hard and he kept going and he achieved something. Isn't that something to be proud of?
That's why. Thank you.
Now then, what else is happening next year?
Next year, we, and I say we, for such a long time, it was just me. But I'm so glad that the council has now got a great leader in Pete Lowe, and the Black Country Festival have got on board, and we're setting up the Duncan Edwards Foundation. So all the money that we've raised over the years that have gone to various charities is now going to be put into the foundation, and we are going to help children of the Black Country, not just Dudley, but of the whole of the Black Country, that have got a great sporting ability, whether it's football or rugby or darts or whatever, that need some sort of financial assistance, whether that's with their training or with their kit, and they can come to the foundation, and in Duncan's name we can go and say, live your dream and fly.
That sounds great.
I believe they're starting a foundation in his name to helping young kids who may have financial problems developing their athletic skills, whatever the sport may be. Do you think that's the sort of thing he would have been proud of or embarrassed by? Or?
Oh, proud. Mm. Very proud, yeah. He loved children. I mean, we were playing on the footpath. He came in and he sat there and, you know, he wanted to be in with us, you know. Yes, he would be very proud.
Something Duncan would have been very proud of was his teammates. In May 1968, they became the best club in Europe.
Here at Wembley tonight, Manchester United have just conquered the mighty Eusebio and his flamboyant Benfica by 4-1 to claim the ultimate prize of all for the first time, more than a decade after first campaigning for it. Goals from Best, Kidd and a brace from Munich Air disaster survivor Bobby Charlton mean the Red Devils are officially the best club in Europe. The tears of joy shed tonight by the crash survivors, manager Matt Busby and players Charlton plus Fulks may also contain some tears in memory of the others that sadly didn't make it here tonight, including Busby babes like Peg, Coleman, Taylor and Edwards.
So how would Duncan Edwards be viewed by people of today? The likes of great manager Tommy Docherty, John Ward and Mick Cairns from Warsaw Football Club. How would they see him?
He would have been the greatest player ever. Make no mistake about that at all. Pelé and people like that, Crouf and Beckenbauer and George Best. Fantastic players. But I think Duncan would have surpassed them all.
They were playing in the FA Youth Cup. They got to the FA Youth Cup final. Duncan Edwards at that time was playing for the first team, playing for international football for England, so he never ever played in the youth team.
Yeah.
So they got to the final and they said, well, they'd bring him into the team. So Jimmy Murphy said to everybody before the game, look, Duncan Edwards is playing. I don't want you to get carried away. Don't get passing in the ball every time you get it or anything like that. Just treat him as a normal player. They're 3-1 down at half-time. At half-time, the first thing Jimmy Murphy said was, every time you get the ball, give the ball to Duncan Edwards, and they won the match. So
I just remember, actually, it is true, because I was going off to school, my junior school, in the morning, and we heard the shout that there'd been the plane crash, if you like, the Munich part, and just as a young kid wanting to be a footballer when I was 7 years old, you're thinking, wow, what's happened there? And that was a really horrible day. And then I kind of look at that group, and as I've grown up as a person, I've been a distance Manchester United follower. I won't say a supporter, but a follower of it all, because of kind of what happened that day in my sort of schoolboy days. But when you look at a guy that's played 150 times for Manchester United and 18 times whatever it is for England, and he's still 21 years of age when he actually died, you know, that's a fantastic footballer there that we lost to the world, and particularly to English football. So I think it's those two facts in itself say enough about the young man and how good he was and how good he was going to be. So it's a tragic loss.
It's a trait with both of you gentlemen here. If you got him here, we're at the training ground at Warsaw Football Club. If you got him now as a teenager, how do you think, from what you've heard or what you may have seen before and players you've been with, how would you
played in today's game, do you think?
I think he'd have been, well, that, I always think this about when people sort of comparisons. I think best players would be the best players, and you know, when he's making his debut for Manchester United at the age of 16, then he's certainly going to get in the Walsall team, isn't he? But I think the other side of that was, I think he was a role model for other people, look, these things can happen, but you've got to be good at it. And I think, you know, there aren't many sort of 21-year-old people that get a statue in memory of them and recognition of what they've done and how they've been. So I think those sort of things, for me, I wish I'd been able to see him play, but I'm not as old as Mick, so it wasn't available to me. But the reputation that he has and still has, I think, is a fantastic one that we should all respect.
Well, not only that, I mean, you talk about him at Walsall, he'd get in our team in any position, but he'd get in any other Midlands team in any position.
They called him a rock in the raging sea. He stood his ground and them around. Now his strength would carry a rock in a raging sea.
Story of the Renner boy, of Duncan Edwards, and there are a lot of people I'd like to say thank you for giving their time to make this possible tonight. First of all, to Rose Cook, also to Dennis Fellows, Ron Probert, Pauline Ludwig, Dale Brooks. You also heard the voices of Tommy Docherty, Bill Folks, John Ward and Mick Kearns. I'd also like to thank Billy Spakeman for his song and his words and his poetry. And also to Keith Horsfall, who did the solo cello work. Any other incidental music you heard was written by Elgar. This is Roy Felstead. I hope you've enjoyed tonight. And perhaps we'll go out listening again to some of the tributes to that great footballer, to Duncan Edwards, the Renner boy.
When you look at a guy that's played 150 times for Manchester United and 18 times whatever it is for England, and he's still 21 years of age when he actually died, you know, that's a fantastic footballer there that we lost to the world, and particularly to English football.
It was when he played for Dudley Schoolboys, and he come out. They said that we used to walk out. All the kids used to walk out, and he used to come out like that, and he used to be like that.
Hands in the air.
And the kids used to say, Duncan, you know. And it was a pleasure to watch and hear it.
I was on 602, and we had the old black and white tellies. And when it come on the news, plane crash, Busby Babes killed in Munich. And it's just stopped Dudley dead.
I often get asked how good a player was he, or how better could he become? And I know what I'm talking about. He would have been the best ever without any shadow of that. No one would have come near touching him at all.
But every time I go up Dudley, I say, morning, Dunk. Hi, Dunk. And I'll sit on the thing and just think a few things. Now it's a shame.
Young and old, they kept him near. His story carries on. He might have left, but he may gone, for the Renner is his home.